Then his eyes went to the last letter. Ah, Gyoko-san. It's been a long time, he added, dry as tinder.
Thank you, Lord, yes. And I'm reborn now that these old eyes have had the honour of seeing you again.
Gyoko's bow was impeccable, and she was carefully resplendent, and he caught the merest flash of a scarlet underkimono of the most expensive silk.
Ah, how strong you are, sire! A giant among men!
She crooned. Thank you. You're looking well, too. Kiku clapped her hands at the sally, and they all laughed with her. Listen, he said, happy because of her. I've made arrangements for you to stay here for a while. Now, Hujiko-san, please come with me. He took Hujiko aside, and after giving her cha and refreshments, and chatting about unimportant things, he came to the point. You agreed half a year, and I agreed half a year. So sorry, but I must know today if you will change that agreement. The square little face became unattractive as the joy went out of it. The tip of her tongue touched her sharp teeth for a moment.
How can I change that agreement, sire?
Very easy. It's finished. I order it.
Please excuse me, sire,
Hujiko said, her voice toneless.
I didn't mean that. I made that agreement freely and solemnly before Buddha, with the spirit of my dead husband and my dead son. It cannot be changed.
I order it changed.
So sorry, sire. Please excuse me. But then Bushido releases me from obedience to you. Your contract was equally solemn and binding, and any change must be agreed by both parties without duress.
Does the Anjin-san please you?
I am his consort. It is necessary for me to please him.
Could you continue to live with him if the other agreement did not exist?
Life with him is very, very difficult, sire. All formalities, most politenesses, every kind of custom that makes life safe and worthy and rounded and bearable has to be thrown away or maneuvered around. So his household is not safe. It has no wa, no harmony for me. It's almost impossible to get servants to understand, or for me to understand. But, yes, I could continue to do my duty to him.
I ask you to finish with the agreement.
My first duty is to you. My second duty is to my husband.
My thought, Hujiko-san, was that the Anjin-san would marry you. Then you would not be a consort.
A samurai cannot serve two lords, or a wife two husbands. My duty is to my dead husband. Please excuse me. I cannot change.
With patience, everything changes. Soon the Anjin-san will know more of our ways, and his household will also have wa. He's learned incredibly since he's been...
Oh, please, sire, don't misunderstand me. The Anjin-san's the most extraordinary man I've ever known. Certainly the kindest. He's given me great honour, and, oh yes, I know his house will be a real house soon, but please excuse me. I must do my duty. My duty is to my husband, my only husband.
She fought for control.
It must be, ne? It must be, sire, or then all the shame and the suffering and dishonour are meaningless, ne? His death, my child's, his swords broken and buried in the Eta village. Without duty to him, isn't all our Bushido an immortal joke?
You must answer one question now, Hujiko-san. Doesn't your duty to a request from me, your liege lord, and to an astonishingly brave man who is becoming one of us and is your master, and, he added, believing he recognized the bloom in her face, your duty to his unborn child. Doesn't all that take precedence over a previous duty?
I'm not carrying his child, sir.
Are you sure?
No, not sure.
Are you late?
Yes, But only a little, and that could be.
Toranaga watched and waited, patiently. There was much yet to do before he could ride away and cast Tetsuko or Kogo aloft, and he was avid for that pleasure. But that would be for himself alone, and therefore unimportant. Hujiko was important, and he had promised himself that at least for today he would pretend that he had won. That he had time and could be patient and arrange matters it was his duty to arrange. Well?
So sorry, sir. No.
Then it's no, Hujiko-san. Please excuse me for asking you, but it was necessary.
Toranaga was neither angry nor pleased. The girl was only doing what was honorable, and he had known when he had agreed to the bargain with her that there would never be a change.
That's what makes us unique on Earth, he thought with satisfaction. A bargain with death is a bargain that is sanctified.
He bowed to her formally.
I commend you for your honor and sense of duty to your husband, Usagi Hujiko, he said, mentioning the name that had ceased to be.
Oh, thank you, sire, she said at the honor he did to her, her tears streaming from the complete happiness that possessed her,
knowing this simple gesture cleansed the stigma from the only husband she would have in this life.
Listen, Hujiko, 20 days before the last day, you are to leave for Edo, whatever happens to me. Your death may take place during the journey, and must appear to be accidental. Eh?
Yes, yes, sire.
This will be our secret. Yours and mine only.
Yes, sire.
Until that time, you will remain head of his household.
Yes, sir.
Now, please tell Gyoko to come here. I'll send for you again before I go. I have some other things to discuss with you.
Yes, sire.
Hujiko bowed deeply and said,
I bless you for releasing me from life.
She went away.
Curious, Toranaga thought. How women can change like chameleons. One moment ugly, the next attractive, sometimes even beautiful. Though in reality, they're not.
You sent for me, sire?
Yes, Gyoko-san. What news have you for me?
All sorts of things, sire,
Gyoko said, her well-made-up face unafraid, a glint in her eyes, but her bowels in upheaval. She knew it was no coincidence that this meeting was taking place, and her instinct told her Toranaga was more dangerous than usual.
Arrangements for the Guild of Courtesans progress satisfactorily, and rules and regulations are being drawn up for your approval. There is a fine area to the north of the city that would...
The area I've already chosen is nearer the coast, the Yoshiwara.
She complimented him on his choice, groaning inwardly. The Yoshiwara, reed moor, was presently a bog and mosquitoed, and would have to be drained and reclaimed before it could be fenced and built on.
Excellent, sire. Next, rules and regulations for the geisha are also being prepared for your perusal.
Good. Make them short and to the point. What sign are you going to put over the gateway to the Yoshiwara?
Lust will not keep. Something must be done about it.
He laughed, and she smiled, but did not relax her guard, though she added seriously.
Again, may I thank you on behalf of future generations, sire?
It's not for you or them, I agreed,
Toranaga told her, and quoted one of his comments in the legacy.
Virtuous men throughout history have always decried bawdy houses and pillow places. But men aren't virtuous, and if a leader outlaws houses and pillowing, he's a fool, because greater evils will soon erupt like a plague of boils.
How wise you are.
And as to putting all the pillow places in one area, that means all the unvirtuous may be watched, taxed, and serviced, all at the same time. You're right again, Gyoko-san. Lust will not keep. It soon gets addled. Next.
Kiku-san has regained her health, sire, perfectly.
Yes, I saw. How delightful she is. I'm sorry. Edo's certainly hot and unkind in the summer. You're sure she's fine now?
Yes, oh yes. But she has missed you, sire. We are to accompany you to Mishima.
What other rumors have you heard?
Only that Ishido's left Osaka Castle. The regents have formally declared you outlaw. What impertinence, sire!
Which way is he planning to attack me?
I don't know, sire,
she said cautiously.
But I imagine a two-forked attack along the Tokaido with the Kawahikoju now that his father, Lord Jikyu, is dead, and along the Koshukaido from Shinano, as Lord Zateki has foolishly sided with Lord Ishido against you. But behind your mountains, you're safe. Oh, yes, I'm sure you'll live to a ripe old age. With your permission, I'm shifting all my affairs to Edo.
Certainly. Meanwhile, see if you can find out where the main thrust will be.
I'll try. Oh, yes, sire. These are terrible times, sire, when brother will go against brother, son against father.
Toranaga's eyes were veiled, and he made a note to increase vigilance on Noboru, his eldest son, whose final allegiance was with the Taiko.
Yes, he agreed. Terrible times. Times of great change. Some bad, some good. You, for example. You're rich now, and your son, for example. Isn't he in charge of your sake factory at Odawara?
Yes, sire.
Kyoko went grey under her makeup.
He's been making great profits, ne?
He's certainly the best manager in Odawara, sire.
So I hear. I have a job for him. The Anjin-san's going to build a new ship. I'm providing all craftsmen and materials, so I want the business side handled with very great care.
Kyoko almost collapsed with relief. She had presumed Toranaga was going to obliterate them all before he left for the war, or tax her out of existence, because he had found out she had lied to him about the Anjin-san and the Lady Toda, or about Kiku's unfortunate miscarriage, which was not by chance, as she had reported so tearfully a month ago, but by careful inducement, at her insistence with Kiku's dutiful agreement.
Oh, cool, sire. When do you want my son in Yokohama? He will ensure it's the cheapest ship ever built.
I don't want it cheap. I want it the very best, for the most reasonable price. He's to be overseer and responsible under the Anjin-san.
Sire, you have my guarantee, my future hopes that it will be as you wish.
If the ship is built perfectly, exactly as the Anjin-san wants, within 6 months from the first day, then I will make your son samurai.
She bowed low and for a moment was unable to talk.
Please excuse a poor fool, sire. Thank you. Thank you.
He has to learn everything the Anjin-san knows about building the ship, so others can be taught when he leaves, ne?
It will be done.
Next, Kiku-san. Her talents merit a better future than just being alone in a box, one of many women.
Kyoko looked up, again expecting the worst.
You're going to sell her contract?
No, she shouldn't be a courtesan again. Or even one of your geisha. She should be in a household, one of few ladies, very few.
But, sire, seeing you even occasionally, how could she possibly have a better life?
He allowed her to compliment him, and he complimented her back, and Kiku, then said,
Frankly, Gyoko-san, I'm getting too fond of her, and I can't afford to be distracted. Frankly, she's far too pretty for me. Far too perfect. Please excuse me, but this must be another of our secrets.
I agree, sire, of course, whatever you say.
Kyoko said fervently, dismissing it all as lies, racking her brain for the real reason.
If the person could be someone Kiku could admire, I would die content.
But only after seeing the Anjin San's ship under sail within the 6 months, he said dryly.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Gyoko moved her fan, for the sun was hot now, and the air sticky and breathless, trying to fathom why Toranaga was being so generous with both of them, knowing that the price would be heavy, very heavy.
Kiku-san would be distraught to leave your house.
Yes, of course. I think there should be some compensation for her obedience to me, her liege lord. Leave that with me. And don't mention this to her for the present.
Yes, sire. And when do you want my son in Yokohama?
I'll let you know that before I leave.
She bowed and tottered away. Toranaga went for a swim. Northward, the sky was very dark, and he knew it would be raining heavily there. When he saw the small group of horsemen coming from the direction of Yokohama, he returned. Omi dismounted and unwrapped the head.
Lord Kashigi Yabu obeyed, sire, just before noon.
The head had been freshly washed, the hair groomed, and it was stuck on the spike of a small pedestal that was customarily used for the viewing. Toranaga inspected an enemy, as he had done 10,000 times before in his lifetime, wondering, as always, how his own head would look after death, viewed by his conqueror, and whether terror would show, or agony, or anger, or horror, or all of them, or none of them, or dignity. Yabu's death mask showed only berserk wrath, the lips pulled back into a ferocious challenge.
Did he die well? The best I have ever seen, sir. Lord Hiromatsu said the same. The two cuts, then a third in the throat. Without assistance and without a sound.
Omi added,
Here is his will. You took off the head with one stroke?
Yes, sire. I asked the Anjin-san's permission to use Lord Yabu's sword.
The Yoshitomo? The one I gave Yabu? He gave it to the Anjin-san?
Yes, sire. He spoke to him through the Tsuku-san. He said, Anjin-san, I give you this to commemorate your arrival at Anjiro, and as a thank you for the pleasure that little barbarian gave me. At first, the Anjin-san refused to take it, but Yabu begged him to and said, None of these manure-eaters deserve such a blade. Eventually, he agreed.
Curious, Toranaga thought. I expected Yabu to give the blade to Omi. What were his last instructions? He asked.
Omi told him. Exactly. If they had not all been also written in the will that had been given publicly to the formal witness, Buntaro, he would not have passed all of them on, and indeed would have invented others.
Yabu was right, he thought furiously,
reminding himself to remember forever that the pen's a long arm from the grave.
To honor your uncle's death bravery, I should honor his death wishes. All of them, without change, ne?
Toranaga said, testing him.
Yes, sire.
Yuki!
Yes, sire,
the maid said.
Bring char, please.
She scurried away, and Toranaga let his mind weigh Yabu's last wishes. They were all wise. Mizuno was a fool, and completely in Omi's way. The mother was an irritating, unctuous old hag, also in Omi's way.
Very well, since you agree, they're confirmed, all of them. And I also wish to approve your father's death wishes before they become final. As a reward for your devotion, you are appointed Commander of the Musket Regiment. Thank you, sir, but I don't deserve such an honor,
Omi said, exulting.
Naga will be second in command. Next, you're appointed head of the Kashigis, and your new fief will be the borderlands of Izu, from Atami on the east to Numazu on the west, including the capital, Mishima, with a yearly income of 30,000 koku.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Please, I don't know how to thank you. I'm not worthy of such honors.
Make sure you are, Omi-sama,
Toranaga said good-naturedly.
Take possession of the castle at Mishima at once. Leave Yokohama today. Report to Lord Sudara at Mishima. The musket regiment will be sent to Hakone and be there in 4 days. Next, privately, for your knowledge alone, I'm sending the Anjin-san back to Anjiro. He'll build a new ship there. You'll pass over your present fief to him. At once.
Yes, sir. May I give him my house?
Yes, you may,
Doranaga said, though of course a fief contained everything therein. Houses, property, peasants, fishermen, boats. Both men looked off as Kiku's trilling laugh came through the air, and they saw her playing the fan-throwing game in the far courtyard with her maid, Suisen, whose contract Toranaga had also bought as the consolation gift to Kiku after the unfortunate miscarriage of his child. Omi's adoration was clear for all the world to see, much as he tried to hide it, so sudden and unexpected had been her appearance. Then they saw her look toward them. A lovely smile spread over her face, and she waved gaily, and Toranaga waved back, and she returned to her game.
She's pretty, ne?
Omi felt his ears burning.
Yes.
Toranaga had originally bought her contract to exclude Omi from her, because she was one of Omi's weaknesses, and clearly a prize, to give or withhold, until Omi had declared and proved his real allegiance, and had assisted or not assisted in Yabu's removal. And he had assisted, miraculously, and proved himself many times. Investigating the servants had been Omi's suggestion. Many, if not all, of Yabu's fine ideas had come from Omi. Omi had, a month ago, uncovered the details of Yabu's secret plot with some of the Izu officers in the musket regiment to assassinate Naga and the other brown officers during battle.
"There's no mistake, Omi-san?"
he had asked, when Omi reported to him secretly at Mishima, while he was awaiting the outcome of Madoka's challenge.
"No, sire. Kiwami Matano of the 3rd Izu Regiment is outside."
The Izu officer, a jowly, heavy-set, middle-aged man, had laid out the whole plot, given the passwords, and explained how the scheme would work.
"I couldn't live with the shame of this knowledge any more, sire. You are our liege lord. Of course, in fairness, I should say the plan was only if necessary. I suppose that meant if Yabu-sama decided to change sides suddenly during the battle. So sorry, you were to be the prime target, then Naga-san, then Lord Sudara." "When was this plan first ordered, and who knows about it?"
"Shortly after the regiment was formed. 54 of us know. I've given all the names in writing to Omi-sama. The plan, codename Plumtree, was confirmed personally by Kashigi Yabu-sama before he left for Osaka the last time."
"Thank you. I commend your loyalty. You are to keep this secret until I tell you. Then you will be given a fief worth 5,000 koku."
"Please excuse me. I deserve nothing, sire. I beg permission to commit seppuku for having held this shameful secret so long."
"Permission is refused. It will be as I ordered."
"Please excuse me. I do not deserve such reward. At least allow me to remain as I am. This is my duty, and merits no reward. Truly, I should be punished."
"What's your income now?"
400 koku, sir. It's enough."
"I'll consider what you say, Kiwami-san."
After the officer had left, he had said,
"What did you promise him, Omi-san?"
"Nothing, sire. He came to me of his own accord yesterday."
"An honest man? You're telling me he's an honest man?"
"I don't know about that, sir. But he came to me yesterday, and I rushed here to tell you."
"Then he will really be rewarded. Such loyalty's more important than anything, eh?"
"Yes, sir."
"Say nothing of this to anyone."
Omi had left, and Toranaga had wondered if Mizuno and Omi had trumped up the plot to discredit Yabu. At once he put his own spies to find out the truth. But the plot had been true, and the burning of the ship had been a perfect excuse to remove the 53 traitors. all of whom had been placed among the Izu guards on that night. Kiwami Matano he had sent to the far north with a good though modest fief.
"Surely this Kiwami is the most dangerous of all,"
Sudara had said, the only one admitted to the plot.
"Yes, and he'll be watched all his life and not trusted. But generally there's good in evil people, and evil in good people. You must choose the good and get rid of the evil without sacrificing the good. There's no waste in my domains to be cast away lightly."
"Yes," Toranaga thought with great satisfaction.
"You certainly deserve a prize, Omi." "Listen, Omi-san, the battle will begin in a few days. You've served me loyally. On the last battlefield after my victory, I'll appoint you Overlord of Izu and make your line of the Kashigi hereditary daimyos again. So sorry, sire. Please excuse me. But I don't deserve such honor,"
Omi said.
"You're young, but you show great promise, beyond your years. Your grandfather was very like you, very clever, but he had no patience."
Again the sound of the lady's laughter, and Toranaga watched Kiku, trying to decide about her, his original plan now cast aside.
"May I ask what you mean by patience, sire?"
Omi said, instinctively feeling that Toranaga wanted the question to be asked. Toranaga still looked at the girl, warmed by her.
"Patience means restraining yourself. There are 7 emotions, ne? Joy, anger, anxiety, adoration, grief, fear, and hate. If a man doesn't give way to these, he's patient. I'm not as strong as I might be, but I'm patient. Understand?"
"Yes, sire. Very clearly."
"Patience is very necessary in a leader."
"Yes."
"That lady, for example, she's a distraction to me. Too beautiful, too perfect for me. I'm too simple for such a rare creature. So I've decided she belongs elsewhere. But, sire, even as one of your lesser ladies..."
Omi mouthed the politeness that both men knew a sham, though obligatory. And all the time, Omi was praying as he had never prayed before, knowing what was possible, knowing that he could never ask.
"I quite agree," Toranaga said. "But great talent merits sacrifice."
He was still watching her throwing her fan, catching her maid's fan in return, her gaiety infectious. Then both the ladies were obscured by the horses.
"So sorry, Kiku-san," he thought. "But I have to pass you on to settle you out of reach quickly. The truth is, I really am getting too fond of you, though Gyoko would never believe I had told her the truth, nor will Omi, nor even you yourself. Kiku-san is worthy of a house of her own, with a husband of her own. Better a consort of the lowest samurai than wife of a farmer or merchant, however rich. I don't agree."
For Omi, those words ended the matter.
"Karma,"
he told himself, his misery overwhelming him.
"Put your sadness away, fool. Your liege lord has decided, so that is the end of it. Midori is a perfect wife. Your mother is to become a nun, so now your house will have harmony." "So much sadness today. And happiness. Daimyo of Izu to be. Commander of the regiment. The Anjin Sands to be kept in Anjiro. Therefore the first ship is to be built within Izu. In my fief. Put aside your sadness. Life is all sadness. Kiku-san has her karma. I have mine. Toranaga has his. And my Lord Yabu shows how foolish it is to worry about this or that or anything."
Omi looked up at Toranaga, his mind clear and everything compartmentalized.
"Please excuse me, sire. I beg your forgiveness. I wasn't thinking clearly." "You may greet her, if you wish, before you leave."
"Thank you, sire."
Omi wrapped up Yabu's head.
Do you wish me to bury it? Or display it? Put it on a spear facing the wreck. What was his death poem?
Omi said,
What are clouds but an excuse for the sky? What is life but an escape from death?
Toranaga smiled.
Interesting, he said.
Omi bowed and gave the wrapped head to one of his men, and went through the horses and samurai to the far courtyard.
Ah, lady, he said to her with kind formality. I'm so pleased to see you well and happy.
I'm with my lord, Omi-san, and he's strong and content. How can I be anything but happy?
Sayonara, lady.
Sayonara, Omi-sama.
She bowed, aware of a vast finality now, never quite realizing it before. A tear welled, and she brushed it aside and bowed again as he walked away. She watched his tall, firm stride and would have wept aloud, her heart near breaking. But then, as always, she heard the so many times said words in her memory, kindly spoken, wisely spoken.
Why do you weep, child? We of the floating world live only for the moment, giving all our time to the pleasures of cherry blossoms and snow and maple leaves, the calling of a cricket, the beauty of the moon, waning and growing and being reborn, singing our songs and drinking cha and sake, knowing perfumes and the touch of silks, caressing for pleasure, and drifting, always drifting. Listen, child, never sad, always drifting as a lily on the current in the stream of life. How lucky you are, Kiku-chan. You're a princess of Ukiyo, the floating world. Drift, live for the moment.
Kiku brushed away a second tear, a last tear.
Silly girl to weep. Weep no more,
she ordered herself.
You're so incredibly lucky. You're consort to the greatest daimyo himself, even though a very lesser unofficial one. But what does that matter? Your sons will be born samurai. Isn't this the most incredible gift in the world? Didn't the soothsayer predict such an incredible good fortune? Never to be believed. But now it's true, nay? If you must weep, there are more important things to weep about. About the growing seed in your loins that the weird-tasting cha took out of you. But why weep about that? It was only an it, and not a child. And who was the father? Truly. I don't know. Not for certain, Gyoko-san. So sorry. But I think it's my lord's,
she had said finally, wanting his child so much to bind the promise of samurai.
But say the child's born with blue eyes and a fair skin. It may, nay? Count the days. I've counted and counted. Oh, how I've counted. Then be honest with yourself. So sorry, but both of our futures depend on you now. You've many a birthing year ahead of you. You're just 18, child, ne? Better to be sure, ne? Yes,
she thought again.
How wise you are, Gyoko-san, and how silly I was. Bewitched. It was only an it, and how sensible we Japanese are to know that a child is not a proper child until 30 days after birth. When its spirit is firmly fixed in its body and its karma inexorable. Oh, how lucky I am! And I want a son and another, and never a girl child. Poor girl children. Oh, gods, bless the soothsayer, and thank you, thank you, thank you for my karma, that I am favored by the great daimyo, that my sons will be samurai, and... Oh, please make me worthy of such marvelousness. What is it, mistress?
Little Suizen asked, awed by the joy that seemed to pour out of Kiku. Kiku sighed contentedly.
I was thinking about the soothsayer, and my lord, and my karma. Just drifting, drifting.
She went farther out into the courtyard, shading herself with her scarlet umbrella, to seek Toranaga. He was almost hidden by the horses and samurai and falcons in the courtyard, but she could see he was still on the veranda, sipping cha now, Hujiko bowing before him again.
"Soon it'll be my turn," she thought. "Perhaps tonight we can begin a new it. Oh, please."
Then, greatly happy, she turned back to her game. Outside the gateway, Omi was mounting his horse, and he galloped off with his guards, faster and ever faster, the speed refreshing him, cleansing him, the pungent sweat smell of his horse pleasing. He did not look back at her, because there was no need. He knew that he had left all his life's passion and everything that he had adored at her feet. He was sure he would never know passion again, the spirits joining ecstasy that ignited man and woman. But this did not displease him.
"On the contrary," he thought with a newfound icy clarity, "I bless Toranaga for releasing me from servitude. Now nothing binds me, neither father nor mother nor Kiku. Now I can be patient, too. I'm 21, I'm almost Daimyo of Izu, and I've a world to conquer."
"Yes, sire,"
Hujiko was saying.
"You're to go direct from here to Anjiro. I've decided to change the Anjin-san's fief from around Yokohama to Anjiro. 20 li in every direction from the village, with a yearly income of 4,000 koku. You'll take over Omi-san's house."
"May I thank you on his behalf, sire? So sorry. Do I understand that he doesn't know about this yet?"
"No. I'll tell him today. I've ordered him to build another ship, Hujiko-san, to replace the one lost. And Anjiro will be a perfect shipyard, much better than Yokohama. I've arranged with a Gyoko woman for her eldest son to be business overseer for the Anjin-san. And all materials and craftsmen will be paid for out of my treasury. You'll have to help him set up some form of administration."
"Oh, cool, sire," she said, immediately concerned. "My time remaining with the Anjin-san will be so short."
"Yes, I'll have to find him another consort, or wife, eh?"
Hujiko looked up, her eyes narrowing. Then she said,
"Please, how may I help?"
Toranaga said,
"Whom would you suggest? I want the Anjin-san to be content. Contented men work better, eh?"
"Yes."
Hujiko reached into her mind.
"Who would compare with Mariko-sama?"
Then she smiled.
"Sire, Omi-san's present wife, Midori-san. His mother hates her, as you know, and wants Omi divorced. So sorry, but she had the astounding bad manners to say it in front of me. Midori-san's such a lovely lady, and oh so very clever."
"You think Omi wants to be divorced?"
Another piece of the puzzle fell in place.
"Oh no, sire, I'm sure he doesn't. What man wants really to obey his mother? But that's our law, so he should have divorced her the first time his parents mentioned it, nay? Even though his mother's very bad-tempered, she surely knows what's best for him, of course. So sorry, I have to be truthful, as this is a most important matter. Of course, I mean no offence, sire, but filial duty to one's parents is the cornerpost of our law."
"I agree,"
Toranaga said, pondering this fortunate new thought.
"The Anjin-san would consider Midori-san a good suggestion?"
"No, sire, not if you ordered the marriage. But, so sorry, there's no need for you to order him."
"Oh?"
"You could perhaps think of a way to make him think of it himself. That would certainly be best. With Omi-san, of course, you just order him."
"Of course. You would approve of Midori-san?"
"Oh, yes. She's 17, her present son's healthy, she's from good samurai stock, so she'd give the Anjin-san fine sons. I suppose Omi's parents will insist Midori give up her son to Omi-san. But if they don't, the Anjin-san could adopt him. I know my master likes her because Mariko-sama told me she teased him about her. She's very good samurai stock. Very prudent, very clever. Oh, yes, he'd be very safe with her. Also, her parents are both dead now, so there'd be no ill feeling from them about her marrying a... marrying the Anshin-san.
Toranaga toyed with the idea.
I've certainly got to keep Omi off balance, he told himself. Young Omi can become a thorn in my side too easily. Well, I won't have to do anything to get Midori divorced. Omi's father will absolutely have definite last wishes before he commits seppuku, and his wife will certainly insist the most important last thing he does on this earth will be to get their son married correctly. So Midori will be divorced within a few days anyway. Yes, she'd be a very good wife. If not her, Hujiko-san, what about Kiku? Kiku-san?
Hujiko gaped at him.
Oh, so sorry, sir. You're going to relinquish her?
I might. Well?
I would have thought Kiku-san would be a perfect unofficial consort, sir. She's so brilliant and wonderful. Though I can see she would be an enormous distraction for an ordinary man. And, so sorry, it would be years before the Anshin-san would be able to appreciate the rare quality of her singing, or dancing, or wit. As wife?
She asked, with just enough emphasis to indicate absolute disapproval.
Ladies of the Willow World aren't usually trained the same as others are, sire. Their talents lie elsewhere. To be responsible for the finances and the affairs of a samurai house is different from the floating world.
Could she learn?
Hujiko hesitated a long while.
The perfect thing for the Anshin-san would be Midori-san for wife, Kiku-san as consort.
Could they learn to live with all his, different attitudes?
Midori-san samurai, sire. It would be her duty. You would order her. Kiku-san also.
But not the Anshin-san.
You know him better than I, sire. But in pillow things and... It would be better for him to... Well, think of it himself.
Toda Mariko-sama would have made a perfect wife for him, ne?
That's an extraordinary idea, sir,
Hujiko replied without blinking.
Certainly both had an enormous respect for each other.
Yes,
he said dryly.
Well, thank you, Hujiko-san. I'll consider what you said. He'll be at Anjiro in about 10 days.
Thank you, sire. If I might suggest, the port of Ito and the Yokose Spa should be included within the Anshin-san's fief.
Why?
Ito, just in case Anjiro is not big enough. Perhaps bigger slipways would be necessary for such a big ship. Perhaps they're available there. Yokose, but...
Are they?
Yes, sire, and...
Have you been there?
No, sire. But the Anshin-san's interested in the sea. So are you. It was my duty to try to learn about ships and shipping. And when we heard the Anshin-san's ship was burned, I wondered if it would be possible to build another. And if so, where and how? Izu is a perfect choice, sire. It will be easy to keep Ishido's armies out.
And why Yokose?
And Yokose, because a Hatamoto should have a place in the mountains where you could be entertained in the style you have a right to expect.
Taranaga was watching her closely. Hujiko appeared so docile and demure, but he knew she was as inflexible as he was, and not ready to concede either point unless he ordered it.
I agree, and I'll consider what you said about Midori-san and Kiku-san.
Thank you, sire,
she said humbly, glad that she had done her duty to her master and repaid her debt to Mariko.
Ito for its slipways, and Yokose, where Mariko had said their love had really begun. I'm so lucky, Hujiko-chan,
Mariko had told her at Edo.
Our journey here has brought me more joy than I have the right to expect in 20 lifetimes. I beg you to protect him in Osaka, Mariko-san. So sorry. He's not like us, not civilized like us, poor man. His nirvana is life and not death. That's still true,
Fujiko thought again, blessing Mariko's memory.
Mariko had saved the Anjin-san? No one else? Not the Christian god, or any gods? Not the Anjin-san himself? Not even Toranaga? No one? Only Mariko alone? Toda Mariko no Akechi Jinsai had saved him. Before I die, I will put up a shrine at Yokose and leave a bequest for another at Osaka and another at Edo. That's going to be one of my death wishes, Toranaga-sama,
she promised herself, looking back at him so patiently, warmed by all the other lovely things yet to be done on the Anjin-san's behalf.
Midori to wife, certainly. Never Kiku as wife, but only a consort, and not necessarily chief consort. And the fief extended to Shimoda, on the very south coast of Izu. Do you want me to leave at once, sire?
Stay here tonight, then go direct tomorrow. Not via Yokohama.
Yes, I understand. So sorry. I can take possession of my master's new fief on his behalf and all it contains the moment I arrive.
Kawanabe-san will give you the necessary documents before you leave here. Now, please send Kiku-san to me.
Fujiko bowed and left. Toranaga grunted.
Pity that woman's going to end herself. She's almost too valuable to lose, and much too smart.
Ito and Yokose?
Ito, understandable. Why Yokose? And what else was in her mind?
He saw Kiku coming across the sun-baked courtyard, her little feet in white tabi, almost dancing, so sweet and elegant with her silks and crimson sunshade, the envy of every man in sight.
Ah, Kiku, he thought. I can't afford that envy. So sorry. I can't afford you in this life. So sorry. You should have remained where you were in the floating world, courtesan of the first class. Or even better, geisha. What a fine idea that old hag came up with. Then you'd be safe, the property of many, the adored of many, the central point of tragic suicides and violent quarrels and wonderful assignations, fawned on and feared, showered with money that you'd treat with disdain, a legend, while your beauty lasts. But now... Now I can't keep you, so sorry. Any samurai I give you to as consort takes to his bed a double-edged knife, a complete distraction, and the envy of every other man, eh? Few would agree to marry you, so sorry, but that's the truth, and this is a day for truths. Fujiko was right. You're not trained to run a samurai household, so sorry. As soon as your beauty goes, oh, your voice will last, child, and your wit, but soon you'll still be cast out into the dung heap of the world. So sorry, but that's also the truth. Another is that the highest ladies of the floating world are best left in their floating world to run other houses when age is upon them, even the most famous, to weep over lost lovers and lost youth in barrels of sake, watered with your tears. The lesser ones at best to be wife to a farmer or fisherman or merchant, or rice seller or craftsman, from which life you were born. The rare, sudden flower that appears in the wilderness for no reason other than karma, to blossom quickly and to vanish quickly. So sad. So very sad. How do I give you samurai children? You keep her for the rest of your time, his secret heart told him. She merits it. Don't fool yourself like you fool others. The truth is, you could keep her easily. Taking her a little, leaving her a lot, just like your favorite Tetsuko or Koko. Isn't Kiku just a falcon to you? Prized, yes. Unique, yes. But just a falcon that you feed from your fist, to fly at a prey and call back with a lure, to cast adrift after a season or two, to vanish forever. Don't lie to yourself. That's fatal. Why not keep her? She's only just another falcon, though very special, very high-flying, very beautiful to watch. But nothing more. Rare, certainly. Unique, certainly. And, oh, so pillowable.
Why do you laugh? Why are you so happy, sire?
Because you are a joy to see, lady.
Blackthorn leaned his weight on one of the three hawsers that were attached to the keelplate of the wreck.
Hiparu! He called out. Pull!
There were 100 samurai naked to their loincloths, hauling lustily on each rope. It was afternoon now and low tide, and Blackthorn hoped to be able to shift the wreck and drag her ashore to salvage everything. He had adapted his first plan when he had found to his glee that all the cannon had been fished out of the sea the day after the Holocaust, and were almost as perfect as the day they had left their foundry near Chatham, in his home county of Kent. As well, almost 1,000 cannonballs, some grape and chain, and many metal things had been recovered. Most were twisted and scored, but he had the makings of a ship, better than he had dreamed possible.
Marvellous, Naga-san! Marvellous!
He congratulated him when he had discovered the true extent of the salvage.
Oh, thank you, Anjin-san. Try hard. So sorry.
Never mind so sorry. All good now.
Yes,
he had rejoiced.
Now the lady can be just a mite longer and a mite more abeam, but she'll still have her greyhound look, and she'll be a piss-cutter to end all piss-cutters. Ah, Rodriguez, he had thought without rancor. I'm glad you're safe and away this year, and there'll be another man to sink next year. If Ferreira's captain general again, that would be a gift from heaven. But I won't count on it, and I'm glad you're safe away. I owe you my life, and you were a great pilot.
Ibaru!
He shouted again, and horses jerked, the sea dripping off them like sweat. But the wreck did not budge. Since that dawn on the beach with Toranaga, Mariko's letter in his hands, the cannon discovered so soon afterward, there had not been enough hours in the day. He had drawn beginning plans and made and remade lists and changed plans and very carefully offered up lists of men and materials needed, not wanting any mistakes. And after the day, he worked at the dictionary long into the night to learn the new words he would need to tell the craftsmen what he wanted, to find out what they had already and could do already. Many times, in desperation, he had wanted to ask the priest to help, but he knew there was no help there now, that their enmity was inexorably fixed.
Karma,
he had told himself without pain, pitying the priest for his misbegotten fanaticism.
Hibaru!
Again the samurai strained against the hold of the sand and the sea. Then a chant sprang up, and they tugged in unison. The wreck shifted a fraction, and they redoubled their efforts. Then it jerked loose, and they sprawled in the sand. They picked themselves up, laughing, congratulating themselves, and leaned on the ropes again. But now the wreck was stuck firm once more. Blackthorn showed them how to take the ropes to one side, then to the other, trying to ease the wreck to port or starboard, but it was as fixed as though anchored.
"I'll have to buoy it. Then the tide'll do the work and lift it," he said aloud in English.
"Dozo?"
Naga said, puzzled.
"Ah, gomen nasai, Naga-san."
With signs and pictures in the sand, he explained, damning his lack of words, how to make a raft and tie it to the spines at low tide. Then the next high tide would float the wreck, and they could pull it ashore and beach it. At the next low tide, it would be easy to manage because they would have laid rollers for it to rest on.
Ah, so des,
Naga said, impressed. When he explained to the other officers, they also were filled with admiration, and Blackthorn's own vassals were puffed up with implied importance. Blackthorn noticed this, and he pointed a finger at one.
Where are your manners?
What? Oh, so sorry, sir. Please excuse me for offending you.
Today I will. Tomorrow, no. Swim out to ship. Untie this rope.
The Ronin samurai quailed and rolled his eyes.
So sorry, sire. I can't swim.
Now it was silent on the beach, and Blackthorn knew all were waiting to see what would happen. He was furious with himself, for an order was an order, and involuntarily he had given a death sentence that was not merited this time. He thought a moment.
Torunaga-sama's orders? All men learn swim, eh? All my vassals swim within 30 days. Better swim in 30 days. You, in water, get first lesson now.
Fearfully, the samurai began to walk into the sea, knowing he was a dead man. Blackthorn joined him, and when the man's head went under, he pulled him up, none too kindly, and made him swim, letting him flounder, but never dangerously, all the way out to the wreck, the man coughing and retching and holding on. Then he pulled him ashore again, and 20 yards from the shallows, he shoved him off.
Swim!
The man made it like a half-drowned cat. Never again would he act self-important in front of his master. His fellows cheered, and the men on the beach were rolling in the sand with laughter. Those who could swim.
Very good, Anjin-san, Naga said. Very wise.
He laughed again, then said,
Please, I send men for bamboo. For raft, ne? Tomorrow try to get all here.
Thank you. More pull today?
No. No thank.
Blackthorn stopped and shaded his eyes. Father Alvito was standing on a dune, watching them.
No, thank you, Naga-san, Blackthorn said. All finish here today. Please excuse me a moment.
He went to get his clothes and swords, but his men brought them to him quickly. Unhurriedly, he dressed and stuck his swords in his sash.
Good afternoon,
Blackthorn said, going over to Alvito. The priest looked drawn, but there was friendliness in his face, as there had been before their violent quarrel outside Mishima. Blackthorn's caution increased.
And to you, Captain Pilot. I'm leaving this morning. I just wanted to talk a moment. Do you mind?
No, not at all.
What are you going to do?
Try to float the hulk?
Yes.
It won't help you, I'm afraid.
Never mind. I'm going to try.
You really believe you can build another ship?
Oh, yes, Blackthorn said patiently, wondering what was in Alvito's mind.
Are you going to bring the rest of your crew here to help you?
No, Blackthorn said after a moment. They'd rather be in Edo. When the ship's near completion, there's plenty of time to bring them here.
They live with Etta, don't they?
Yes.
Is that the reason you don't want them here?
One reason?
I don't blame you. I heard they're all very quarrelsome now, and drunk most of the time. Did you know a week or so ago there was a small riot among them, and their house burned down? So the story goes.
No. Was anyone hurt?
No, but that was only through the grace of God. Next time. It seems one of them has made a still. Terrible what drink does to a man.
Yes. Pity about their house. They'll build another.
Alvito nodded and looked back at the spines washed by the waves.
I wanted to tell you before I go. I know what the loss of Mariko-san means to you.
I was greatly saddened by your story about Osaka, but in a way uplifted. I understand what her sacrifice means.
Did she tell you about her father, or that other tragedy?
Yes, some of it.
Ah, then you understand also. I knew Jusan Kubo quite well.
What? You mean Akechi Jinsei?
Oh, sorry, yes. That's the name he's known by now. Didn't Mariko-sama tell you?
No.
The Taiko sneeringly dubbed him that. Jusan Kubo, Shogun of the 13 Days. His rebellion, from mustering his men to the Great Seppuku, lasted only 13 days. He was a fine man, but he hated us. Not because we were Christians, but because we were foreigners. I often wondered if Mariko became Christian just to learn our ways, to destroy us. He often said I poisoned Gorda against him.
Did you?
No.
What was he like?
a short, bald man, very proud, a fine general, and a poet of great note. So sad to end that